Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the Heritage Radio Network in Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Call in all of your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Nastasha the Hammer Lopez is currently en route from Chicago at the James Beard Awards, but we are joined in studio today with Peter Kim, the president, director,
Galactic Emperor, man, I told you.
Lawyer emeritus.
Yeah.
You are actually the lawyer emeritus.
I am the lawyer emeritus, yeah.
Yes, of the Museum of Food and Drink.
Basically, so, you are looking for a legal counsel to justify all of your nefarious actions.
Not on the air, Peter, not on the air. And Veronica, who's a new intern at the museum and hails originally, I guess, from Brazil, but is currently living in Miami.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it feels in here like Miami. It feels in this room like we're in Miami.
I'm bringing some sunshine to New York.
Yeah, or more the humidity. And the sulfur stink. That's the other thing people don't realize who've never been to Florida is the entire place smells of sulfurous groundwater. Or is that just me that believes that?
Can't blame me for it, though.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe you did dope all of the entire ground with sulfurous minerals. I don't know. You know that smell, that Florida water smell when they water the lawns with that Florida water?
All too well.
Yeah.
All too well.
Do they have on that side the giant palmetto bugs? First of all, is everything just built in cleared palmetto like it is over in Sarasota, or is it different?
Well, I'm actually from North Miami, so I am pretty much in the clear of palmetto bugs, thankfully.
Oh, nice, yeah.
But
they make our cockroaches look like...
I know.
Like, you know, like nothing, like weaklings.
I know.
Yeah. Although we do have the giant water bugs here in New York that are on the lower floors of our buildings only, and they don't congregate in huge packs. I call them travelers because they just kind of, you see one, you kill it. You're not worried about infestation because it came somewhere from the pipes down from the depths where the alligators grow. Yeah. Also important.
Speaking of water bugs, Dave's covered in water right now.
I biked here. And joined in the engineering booth with our old pal, Jack Inslee.
Hey, guys.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good. So we have a bunch of stuff to get to, so I'll just get to it. Although, please do call in your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Sad news to report. Most of you who are plugged into the food internetosphere probably already know, but Josh Ozersky died yesterday. They still haven't figured out why he died, but he was found in his hotel room yesterday morning. He was in Chicago, actually, for the Beard Awards. He's only 47, very sad, you know, very very kind of larger-than-life figure. You know, I've worked with him a couple times over the years on things, so, you know.
Yeah, much respect.
Yeah, and...
he actually did a show here for a while back in 2009 and 10.
I remember that.
Yeah, the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Yeah, you know, I could tell some crazy Josh stories. Like, he was like a larger-than-life, a legit kind of larger-than-life individual. Had a couple of same early champions as I did, like Jeffrey Steingarten. You know, it's just...
No BS.
Crazy. Well, it depends on how you define it. I guess he's like, you know, like his writing was over the top. He was over the top. Anyway, he's definitely going to be missing the food world, so it's a sorry announcement to have to make. so rather than go launching into my normal stuff, why don't you talk? We have a museum benefit coming up in next week, actually.
Yeah, next Wednesday. So we've got the annual MOFAD Spring Benefit Dinner coming up, and I'm biased, but I think this is really the most exciting dining event in New York City. This is actually a concept that Dave put together, and it's...
With Nastasia the Hammer Lopez.
With Nastasia the Hammer Lopez and Patrick Martins, as Dave wipes the moisture off his face. But we get eight of the best chefs in the country to come together and put together a meal. But it's not just any kind of meal. We do museum themes, like food of ancient Rome or space food or... what else have we done, Dave? We did caveman food.
That was a good one, Wiley.
Yeah, Wiley did caveman food.
Well, speaking of James Beard and winners, TV Dinner.
Yep, exactly. TV Dinner by Michael Anthony, who just won the James Beard Award for Outstanding Chef.
We did Ancient Rome with a Whole Ostrich by another
Mark Wedner, just Best Chef New York City, and congrats, Mark. Tosi did, Chef Christina did Space Food. She's just won for outstanding pastry chef.
So yeah,
so we have a lot of big people, and
you want to give them a rundown of who it is?
Yeah, yeah. So this year we've got a great lineup.
Don't miss any, or I'll kill you.
Yeah, yeah. We've got Aaron Bluedorn from Cafe Balloon. We've got Elizabeth Faulkner. We've got Alex Guarnaschelli. She's going to be doing What Would Jesus Eat, which I think is really one of the more exciting topics. We've got Mads Refslund.
But we know what he drinks. We know he turns water into wine when the keg is kicked at the wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
That we know.
And then I can then turn wine into pee. That's my special power.
Wow, we just got in trouble with a whole chunk of our listeners there.
So there you go. Anyway, and then we have Mads Refslund, one of the co-founders of Noma. And now he's at the helm of Acme. He's doing Weeds of New York. We've got Andy Ricker, your friend, my friend, Pock Pock Man, and he's doing Rotten Food. And then we've got...
But remember, we're giving that because, I know for... He likes doing things like fermented short ribs and stuff like this, so we gave him... And the concept here... I'll let you finish so you don't forget anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Marcus Samuelson, and then we've got...
What's his theme again? What's his theme?
He's doing... So around the turn of the 19th century, the Emperor Menelik, who's one of the most beloved emperors of Ethiopia... held all these giant public banquets for over 10,000 people at a time. And so he's doing a meal that is an homage to that.
Okay.
Then we have Bill Telepan. He's taking on the story of an ancient Sassanite dish called sikbaj. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but...
Nobody does. It's old.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay, that title is actually stolen from The Language of Food, which is a book out by Jurovsky. About the history of certain, a linguistic approach to, a linguist reads the menu kind of a thing.
Yep. Yeah. And then we've got Bill Yosef, the former executive pastry chef at the White House, taking on the topic when the White House burned, because in 1814, the British troops arrived at the White House to burn it down, but they found, bizarrely enough, a meal laid out for them that was a meal that President Madison and Dolly Madison, the First Lady, had abandoned in their haste to leave. Of course, they saved the portrait of George Washington on the way out.
And they say Americans aren't polite. We left dinner for them.
Exactly, exactly. So they ate it, they drank it, then they burned the house down.
See, it's the Brits. It's the Brits who caused the problems.
Exactly.
No offense. I'll be in Britain, actually, next week as well, right after the benefit. I fly out to London. I'm doing cocktail demos at Zetter Townhouse.
Cheers. So
again, now you got in trouble with the other half of it.
Oh yeah, there you go. My goal is to alienate pretty much everybody, except you. So tickets. We've just got a handful of tickets left, and booze by none other than some schmuck named Dave Arnold.
Yep.
Also, maybe a James Beard Award winner.
They will be James Beard Award winning authors' cocktails.
Exactly.
That's the most precise way to put it. Yeah, Pernod Ricard's giving us the liquor for that.
We got Pernod Ricard for liquor. We're going to have Jeffrey Porter, the wine director at Del Posto, is getting an incredible lineup of wine. We got sparkling wine, champagne. We've got, and then
Nastasia will be there.
Yeah, yeah, Nastasia will be there in the corner with her bottle of champagne. And then we'll have a selection of six wines available during the dinner. This is going to be essentially a pretty blowout affair at Carnegie Hall, top two floors, rooftop terrace, looking over the city.
Now it's expensive.
Yes, it is. It is expensive, but of course it's to support the development of the Museum of Food and Drink, which is itself a worthy cause. But
the first time we did this, we were incredibly stupid. We charged $250, and how much would you have to pay for that meal if you want to go get it?
I mean, there's no price you could pay for it.
Right.
I mean,
so now we're charging something that's we're charging museum style benefit prices now because we're older and wiser. But I'll tell you something: the great thing about all these, we'll give you the price in a minute. Before now, how much would you pay? But the thing is,
three low installments.
Yeah, yeah, and we can do that. Frankly, we could do that. We could probably do that. The three low installments. Yeah, we could take the installment plan.
Yeah, I'll take the installment. Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Anyway, but the point is. We hopefully also you also get a little a spiel and taste about what we're going to be doing in the museum in the upcoming year, directly from Peter's mouth. But the way we structure the reason we structure the benefit this way is 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10 really, unless you only go to 10 benefits a year and one of them's ours. The they have a chef come in and the chefs are maybe they get a couple of chefs. Or maybe they have big tastings, but typically the chef is doing something that is some version of what you might be able to get at their restaurant. And we do exactly the opposite. It's actually a huge kind of challenge that our chefs take on. It's a huge commitment, which is why we're so grateful to all of the chefs that have done it over the years and the ones that are doing it this year. In fact, look to see a bunch of them. We invite the chefs who have done it to come just as guests and expect to see some of those heavy hitters there at the benefit as well. You're going to get stuff that they don't cook otherwise. And so you can't really ever buy any of this stuff. It's not something that they would ever do normally. So we're making them get out of their comfort zone.
Yeah. So one night only. I mean, like, you know, like the giant ostrich that Mark did. Anyway.
Now how much would you pay?
Yes, exactly. So tickets are $750 a head.
Ouch.
And
kidding.
This is your event, man. Yeah. Look, we're trying to build a museum here, okay? So so $750 a head. It is, you know, we do put a lot of love into it. And tickets are available at benefit.mofad.org. I think we've only got like 10 or 11 tickets left, so definitely hop on and get it pronto if you want to go.
But definitely the secret ingredient here isn't love, it's money.
Yes, yes.
Yes, the secret ingredient here is money.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, benefit.mofad.org.
Nice, all right. And Jack, is our Kickstarter still going?
It is. We got 7 days left.
All right, do your plug. Let's get all the plugs out of the way for Justino's sake.
Yeah, donate. 7 days left, or this website explodes.
Are you gonna really just say donate?
Yeah.
Donate.
Sunday.
Yeah, like that. That's.
I was just baiting you.
All right. Here we go. Anyway, yeah. How close are we, Jack?
We're about $7,000 away.
So you made half the money from last week.
Right.
And we have 7 more days.
Yes.
People, please.
Come on.
Please.
Let's do it.
Do you want to be able to have a website so that, like, the stuff that you call in to 718-497-2128 actually gets put on a website that works and has new and interesting content? I don't know. Do you? Do
you should see Jack's puppy dog eyes right now.
Yeah.
Jackie Molecules is crying some sweet, sweet H2O out of his tear ducts right
and,
now.
And you're crying some sweet, sweet H2O out of your forehead right now.
Dude, like, enough with the, like, I biked here. Enough. All right. Today is Cinco de Mayo, and in honor, yesterday, for those of you that listen to this or like follow the tweet, when I was in Mexico a couple of weeks ago, I bought a Nixtamatic grinder, which allows me to make masa, well, better than the Corona, which I detest, and better than the Cuisinart, which I detest for this application, better than... Actually, you made the ride next to Mal with me. Yeah, what a pain in the butt that was.
A pain in the bleep, man.
Yeah, that sucked. Tasted good.
Yeah, outstanding.
Yeah.
And half of them went in the trash at the end of the night.
People are the worst. You know something about people? They're the worst. Not you, dear listener, but everybody else. That one next to you who's not listening, he's the worst,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, the worst. Or her. Maybe she's the worst. I don't know. I don't know who's sitting next to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so the issue here is that it's hard to get some really interesting corn. So I observed a lot of tortilla, not a lot, but as many as I could while I was working, tortillas being made in Mexico, came up with my grinder, somehow packed it into my bag and got it under the weight limit. You ever do that trick when you're putting your bag on the scale?
I put it on the edge.
And you lift a little bit?
Yes.
With the other hand? Like you hold it down and you lift a little bit?
I do it on the edge or I put my knee up against it.
Yeah. What's up, Slickster? Same with me. Yeah, because you know what? They don't know how much – they don't weigh me. They don't know how much I weigh. They don't have a weight limit on me. Why do they put a weight limit on my bag? They're jerks.
Yeah.
I'm buying a grinder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The other trick is, like, normally when I bring something that's 1 billion pounds, I'll just put it in my – and I've trained myself over the years to look like I'm carrying a normal weight backpack when I'm, in fact, carrying, like, a backpack full of lead bricks.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if you can – if you look like you're like, ah, when you're going through the line, they're like, oh, no, man, we got to weigh that. But if you just look like you're carrying a bag, you can collapse as soon as you get through security. But, like
– like, that dude just has purple arms. That's terrible.
He's purple. You know, his face is white as the driven snow, and his arms are purple. This is absolutely normal. Like, you know, he had a body transplant from Grimace or something. But you know, nice. That being as it may, the point is that I couldn't carry. Different countries have different rules about what's kosher, so I probably could have gotten the grinder through American TSA, even though I couldn't get the powders through it because they're usually okay with electric motors. As long as it can't be interpreted as a weapon. But I've had electric motors be problems in Colombia, and no one could tell me with a straight kind of story what the Mexican rules were going to be. So I didn't want a chance, so I had to check it. Anyways. Okay, so Cinco de Mayo, I come back. I want to get the good corn. I was talking last week at the other Beards, the one that was here, with Rick Bayless, and he's like, "Well, where should I get the good corn from?" He's like, "You idiot, go to Macienda." I was like, "Duh," because I know them. Why wasn't I thinking? So I went. In fact, yesterday I did a fast nixtamalization, people, so it's not the best, but expect more to come. I did met up with Jorge Gaviria from Macienda, who gave me some of the most awesome kind of corns. I was tasting them dry, just really interesting corns. So the one I did yesterday was a white bolita from Michoacan. Which was just had an incredible kind of corn, kind of almost like a almost like a movie theater corn taste right out of the dry, uncooked.
Whoa, that's
and
wild.
Yeah, so I nixtamalized it yesterday. So now we're, my game, I need to get my nixtamatic kind of tuned in more. It needs to be broken in. I need another couple pounds of masa. And I need to get my tortilla press in order, man. I have that Victoria, the regular Victoria tortilla press, and it's just weak. Everyone says it's great, but I look at it, and there's too much slop in the freaking hinge, right? So, like, it pinches it in an angle. So the tortillas, A, they're too thick on the ones. Even if I double flip them, I'd have to quadruple freaking flip them to get them the way I want. And then I'm always overpressing the one side that's closest to the freaking handle. Why don't they just machine the thing with the right freaking thickness for what I want? So I'm going to have to build some spacers or else get a better press. Because the lady who like did the best that I saw in Mexico, I mean, I didn't see any of the sweet, sweet old, you know, abuelitas doing it with the...
Yeah, that's wild.
The hand pat. That's awesome. It's incredible. Yeah. But... like these guys weren't using the little Victoria like hand press that I was using. They were using two sheets of giant cold rolled steel with a big pipe on it, and they were just like bap bap bap, and they were like totally even throughout. So I'm gonna more on that later over the next couple weeks. I'll talk about it when I get. But in honor of the Cinco de Mayo, I brought in some treats from Mexico for us.
Nice.
Yeah. So I have. I don't know if I talked about these before, but these are from Puebla. These are camotes. You know these?
No.
So apparently, these nuns, I don't know, Santa Clara, or something like this. Nuns use this fancy sweet potato that grows around Puebla, and it's only made in Puebla. They call it camotes, and they make these sweets with flavors in them. So why don't we? Like, they're different flavors. You can read semi-Spanish, so you can tell me. And then Jack, you can have some of these. And then also, I brought in my favorite Mexican confection. Mazapan.
Oh, nice.
Mazapan is like their take on marzipan, but it's actually it's just made with peanuts, and it has a texture of halva. This is what halva wishes it would be. Sorry, all of the Greece in the Middle East. This is what halva wishes it could be. For those of you that aren't allergic to the peanut. Are you allergic to the peanut?
Not allergic to the peanut, well, thankfully.
Have some peanut. Jack, peanut product?
Love it.
Yeah, here, have one. Come take one. Cooking issues. Recorded in a studio that may contain nuts. Okay, now let's get to some questions. You like that, right? You try that? You try it? You guys are so slow. I would have finished the whole box by now.
Thanks, Dave.
I know, man. You do hungry, hungry hippos, but you know, I like to savor things.
Oh, gee, you know what? I'm a jerk.
It's called mindfulness, Dave. It's a new thing.
Jerk. What flavor are you opening of the kimono?
Limon.
El limon.
Wow, we had to do the smarmy accent. Is that?
Well, that's a smarmy. That's just my normal voice, man. Why? Why? Hey, you know what I like about them? They dry out on the outside, but the inside has like a kind of an awesome kind of a texture.
Yeah,
they're only made in Puebla, baby.
Why don't we take a really quick break now?
All right, we'll come right back with some actual questions on cooking issues.
Back
and we don't have to do a commercial thing because we're brought to us by us.
Yeah, how
is
about that?
Is that because nobody loves us enough to support us anymore, Jack?
No, they love us. We're just switching it up.
Cooking Issues is supported by absolutely nobody.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not true.
That's so rough. Let me ask you a question, though. I was wondering the other day, who's the largest supplier of heritage and rare breed meats?
I think it starts with H.
Gee, I don't know. I can't place it.
I can't place it.
I can't.
I'm tipping my tongue, man.
I can't.
I can't.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I am Patrick Martins.
All right, Peter, do your Patrick Martins
impression. No, man, you can't have me do that. I can't do it. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're a liar.
You're the one who has a good impression.
You're a liar.
HeritageFoodsUSA.com. That's HeritageFoodsUSA.com.
Oh, yeah. I see, because Patrick would get mad.
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably calling and saying, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
He's too busy selling meat right now.
Selling heritage meats.
That's right.
All right. Sam Geiger wrote in a while back with Cold Pack Squirrel. That's right, Cold Pack Squirrel. Wants to know, hey, can you discuss the best way to cook squirrel that have been cold pack canned? Thanks, Sam Geiger. Well, Sam, I hate to break this to you, buddy. It's cold pack canned. Sucker's already cooked.
Yeah.
You don't need to cook it again. But I think I was reading actually a lot on squirrel, the success of squirrel meat canning, and I've never done it. I knew a guy in, I knew a guy in North Carolina who used to pay his landscaping crew in squirrel. You know what I'm saying? Because I've only had squirrel in mixed in with stews in North mm-hmm. Carolina. So when you're making a squirrel that way, there's really no way for me to tell you I know what squirrel tastes like. It's like when someone gives you little tidbits of alligator that have been coated in like a half inch of batter and fried to within an inch of its life, right? Right? So like, right. Veronica, what does that taste like? It tastes like fry. Am I right?
Exactly. And it's pretty chewy.
Yeah. I've had bigger pieces of alligator, and it's kind of like, it needs to be really fresh. I had, like, previously frozen, refrozen, like, kept in somebody's, like, swamp cooler alligator. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in big chunks, you don't want that.
Is it like snake? For some reason, I imagine it being like snake.
I've only had snake in small chunks with a taste fry. I've never had, like, a whole grilled snake.
Oh, man.
I'm sure it's good.
I love snake.
No, but it's going to be fresh, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it's a delicate meat that is abused too much by freezing and refreezing.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
That's the only large chunk alligators I've ever tasted have been cooked that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm not. And similarly with squirrel, I'm going to go ahead and say that I've never had it in such a way that I know I could say this is what squirrel tastes like. My guess is it tastes like rabbit. I hear that how squirrel tastes is vitally dependent on how it was skinned, whether all the glands have been taken out of the squirrel. That said, I'm sure it's like rabbit. So if you'd use it any way, you would use like a canned kind of a rabbit, any kind of a white meat. Strangely, all of the cold pack canning, they can in kind of liquids, not in fat, because I think they're worried about the fat thing. Because I think it would be good to have it like rillette. I would want like put some pork fat up in that piece and make it rillette style, right? Wouldn't that be delicious?
Yeah, yeah.
If anyone out there has made, hey, Nastasia the Hammer Lopez is here. Move my bag, please, and my helmet, please. I would love to have some squirrel rillette.
You know what I'd call that? Squirrellette.
Oh, very well. I don't know.
That's a good one.
It's not a Piper level pun, but it's okay. Welcome back to the land of New York.
Thank you.
Well, you're wearing like something very tropical, considering you're just in. You were in Chicago, not Hawaii. Did you think you were going to Hawaii?
No,
This is
the shirt I bought the day when we were late after moving, remember?
We're in the process of moving Booker and Dax's lab, by the way. Up to Connecticut. So, do you have any? We talked about Mark.
Oh, good.
We talked about, who else did we mention?
Christina Tosi.
Right.
Mike Anthony.
Right. Anyone else we know? Anyone else? Winners? Friends of the program?
No,
friends of the US?
Wait. Wiley got inducted into
the
Who's Who. He didn't win. It was a slam dunk. That's just like a lifetime achievement.
It's still an accolade.
Also, Alan Benton.
Alan Benton.
But I mean, it was like
Best Bacon is an award. Best Bacon is an award?
No. It was like an America's.
If it was, it would be Sam at
restaurant. What do you guys
think? Oh, yeah. Well, it depends what you're using it for, right? Benton's bacon as a culinary bacon. But Sam Edwards isn't eating bacon.
Okay, fair enough.
And so, what were you saying? Benton was winning for us?
No, it was like the America. He knew he was winning too. It was like a Wiley kind of award.
Yeah, you know what? Whatever. The only time I ever won something like that, they didn't tell me ahead of time.
You know what the worst part of this award was? This program. So in Mark's speech, he thanks sobriety at the end, right?
Like, what?
Hold on. And then all these other chefs were like,
what?
Oh man. I don't think I'm going to drink tonight, man. That's, you know.
So
I was like, I can't take a bottle of champagne and a straw now because.
Well, it wasn't really a party atmosphere anyway with Josh and everything, right? Or was it?
Not everyone knew.
I've been in situations like that where people are trying to have a festive thing and something really awful has just happened and only some of the people know, and it's very tension.
We did have a moment of silence, though, for Homaro.
Because they knew that ahead of time. Well, he's from Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, bad year for food all the way around. Shaw, too, for Me Gullet, was this year, right?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Well, good for paying attention to the world stuff. He went on after E. Gullet to be one of the founders of Quirky.
Oh, the air conditioning company?
They're not an air conditioning company. That's just a
You know what I mean, yeah.
Yes. Okay, next question in from Trudy. Said, hey, Dave. Nastasha. I gave her a whole pack of that.
I have a whole.
She's like, I'm done with the sweet potatoes. I'm done with it. Hiya, Dave, Nastasha, and Jack, and now also Peter and Veronica. This is Veronica, by the way, Nastasia. She works with the music.
Hi.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I have a high look. This is a good word. I have a hydrocolloid conundrum. I like conundrums. They're good. I've been trying to invent slash create a frozen mousse pudding concoction. A frozen mousse pudding concoction, right? Say that with your most snoot-toodly lawyer.
I got a mouthful of Pueblo, man.
All right. Puebla.
I also need to put my monocle on to do that properly.
You don't have your planner's peanut monocle at all times with you?
I usually pack it, but...
Monocle packing. All right. Playing around with a combo of agar, xanthan, polydextrose, psyllium, which I've never used. I mean, I know what it is. And flax. Basically everything I have on hand. I haven't been... Like, that's like a juice bar stuff, right? You're down with the psyllium, right? You pay attention
to what
people do.
No, I don't pay attention to
it. You're the one that tells me all the juice trends.
Yeah, I know all the... Yeah, but I don't know psyllium.
What about you? What are you, Veronica? Are you a juice trend person? Are you a juice person?
I'm a dessert person.
Thank goodness. Dessert. God bless dessert. You know that a lot of places now are toning down on desserts because their margins aren't as high. They'd rather flip the tables. Desserts have higher because the ingredients in desserts usually have... You read that article? There's a bunch of articles on this.
I didn't, but that's just because I'm not their customer. If I was there, I would order enough desserts to make their margins pretty high.
So. Yeah. Well, no, but in other words, like, just like chocolate and cream and stuff, it's just expensive stuff.
Pretty expensive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot more expensive than mashed taters. You know what I'm
Very
saying?
True.
Taters is cheap.
I don't know what's prompted that right now.
Well, I can walk into whatever. I'm just saying. Like, you know, this is why that's, like, one of the most ubiquitous sides is because they're free.
Yeah.
Rice, potatoes, beans, all, you know, fundamentally free. I haven't been having much luck, though, since it always comes out slimy. You hate things that are slimy, Stas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okra.
Oh, my God, Stas.
Mm-hmm. Remember that okra that we...
Which?
No, it wasn't okra, that slimy...
Oh, my God, the yam, that Japanese slime yam. What's it called?
Oh, tororo.
Doesn't it start with an M? N?
There's sticky yam that's like grated, and then it's...
No, but the whole one. It's called like nine... Oh my God, we had the most like HR unfriendly moment in the French culinary where someone had peeled the entire... It's like a 2 foot long...
Phallus.
There you go. And you peel it, and it just self-slimes. Like, it's made out of personal lubricant.
Did you smash it, or did
no,
you
No, well, we tried
it,
holding
we handed it.
It
to Nastasha. She squeezed it and shot it across the room, and it exploded shattered. Against the wall.
Oh, God.
And everyone was like, oh! Oh! Like that. That's pretty much how it went.
See you guys next week on Cooking.
Anyway. Haven't been having much luck, though, since it always comes out slimy. See, this is the problem with this show. This is why, like, we, like...
Aren't nominated.
Because, like, I say the word slimy, and then for, like, 3 minutes we're talking about yams. I got a mental issue. I'm trying to reduce the xanthan as much as I can, since I think this might be the problem. Well, it is. Look, xanthan is some slimy... It's not really slimy. It's snotty. Like, xanthan is, like, snot. And also, like, even in, like, relatively small concentrations... Remember, xanthan is supposed to be used in very small concentrations. In relatively small concentrations, it has that, like, jiggly... Like, you know where, like, you twist, like, a container of it, and the outside starts rotating, but the center stays still for a minute, and then it, like, has that back motion, that, like, shoulder flick back motion to it.
It's milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
And it's not better than yours, which is weird. They come to the yard and they're still like, "No, I'll keep the other milkshake that I already have." I think the xanthan might be the problem, but I can only reduce it so far before there's no more thickening effect. See, here's the thing: you shouldn't really use xanthan as a thickener. You should use xanthan as a stabilizer, right? Not an emulsifier, but a stabilizer. Well, I'll finish reading your thing before I get it, because I have this terrible habit of just going off into tangents. It's like I can't get rid of it. I'm sorry.
You don't say.
This is why, you know, they have me write a book, because there you're forced to follow some sort of linear thing. If you go to tangents, at least, like, you can put them in footnotes or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever. I also have agar. But I'm not sure how to throw that into the mix. I have yet to use any eggs, since I'm trying to keep it vegan. Vegan face! What? Stas, you just, you know.
I know.
Okay. I was so happy you made it here, but then you disappointed me with the lack of vegan face. You know what I mean? I want to keep it vegan, if doable. I know this posed problem lacks specifics, but I just want to learn more about what gums will help and which won't, since I'm really fascinated by hydrocolloids in general. I've also been wondering about guar gum. Is this redundant if I already have xanthan? No, it is not. Thing with guar is, so guar is very closely related to locust bean gum, but guar used to be cheaper. Now that fracking is there, it's not. But bad guar has a very specific beany taste, and it tastes like black-eyed pea flour. You ever had black-eyed pea flour? Mm-mm. Anyway, there are certain like African dumplings made with black-eyed pea flour, and so I used to have black-eyed pea flour around, and it tastes like ground-up dried black-eyed peas.
Right,
which is okay if that's what you want, but not. If you don't.
Has a distinctive flavor,
Yeah, which is unpleasant in ice cream, let's say. Right. So you have to get a higher, more purified form of guar called flavor-free guar. And you can get that from a couple places. The one I use is from TIC Gums, flavor-free guar, NT1000 or 4000 or something. It's been a long time since I've had to buy it because it lasts a long time. Konjac. I haven't used a lot of konjac. Konjac, a lot of people use it, but I haven't used it a lot, which I just got a small amount of but have yet to test. Gelan, methylcellulose, CMC, gum arabic, and locust bean gum. Will any of these help? So these are like a long list of different hydrocolloids. Each has their application here. which would you prioritize in terms of usefulness in the kitchen? I can't afford all of them, and so I'm looking to equip myself with the best Swiss Army knives. Okay. First hydrocolloid that I'd learned to use 100% inside, outside, upside down is agar. Why? Because it's super friendly. You can buy it anywhere, and it can do a lot. And so for your situation, you could either do a light set agar, right? So you could whip it into a mousse with a light set agar and then let it set, right? And when it'll set, it'll gel in that mousse form. You use a small amount of agar, and you can get a really nice texture, like 2% – sorry – 0.2%, 2 grams in a 2 grams per liter of agar will give you a nice, like very easy to break gel that'll just hold that gel there while it's been foamed up after it sets, and it sets at a relatively Gelan probably even better for that, and you could use roughly the same amount because Gelan sets faster than agar does, but both of them will work. Agar not freeze thaw stable, which is good. Why? Because when it melts in your mouth, right, the structure of the agar will be obliterated because it's not freeze-thaw stable. So that's good. But then things like guar can stop when it's frozen. There's still liquids in there because you haven't fully frozen it, because if you did, it would be hard like a rock, which it's not. So things like guar will act as a kind of stabilizer to stop the liquids and solids from separating from themselves. Xanthan will act as also, in a similar way to the light agar, would act as a kind of thin gelling agent. Don't use enough xanthan for it to actually be a thickener. Use it like very low percentages, like a quarter of a percent, like 2.5 grams per liter, something like there, just to add a little bit of extra set, like a yield point to the thing. What I recommend is this. Go on, I don't agree with everything he says, obviously, but go on Martin Lersch's website, which is Kymos, download the latest version of his hydrocolloid thing, and then just flip through zillions of the recipes that he grabs from all over the internet and all people, and kind of get a feel for what you like. Try one or two of them, see what you think. I definitely don't agree with all of the with all of it by any standard, but go check that out, and obviously check out there's huge custard and pudding sections in the modernist cuisine, and if you don't own it, you know there are still some reasons for the local library. Did you know that? Yeah, you could, for instance, if you don't own modernist cuisine, you can go there and look at it.
Right.
Yeah, although
I've got a patient caller on the line.
Patient caller, you are on the air.
Kyle calling from Los Angeles, and
hey.
I have a question about pina coladas.
Oh, nice. Pina coladas. All right. What do you got? Uh-oh.
Coco Lopez, right?
Yep.
And if I don't want to use that, let's say I want to like try and make my own at home or add something to like coconut cream, I'm wondering what I could add. Like, should I just kind of add the chemicals on the back of the container, or is there anything you'd recommend?
Yeah, so... By the way, for a while we thought we'd start calling Nastasia Coco Lopez, but she didn't like it, so we stopped.
I might have to pick that one up.
Yeah. So, okay, the first thing you need, obviously, is you're going to need like a very fatty, like a coconut milk product, very fatty, and you're also going to need, so you want it thick, a lot of sugar, and you're going to need a stabilizer. Now, coconut fats in drinks are have, for me, been notoriously difficult to stabilize fully. Using like the normal stuff that I normally use, which would be like mixtures of gum arabic and xanthan. I haven't looked at the back of a can of coconut cream in a long time, so I'm not sure. What do they use? Do you have one on you? Do you know what they use?
So there's coconut sugar, water, polysorbate, 60, sorbitan mono, saturate, propylene glycol, alginate, mono, and diglycerides, emulsifier, citric acid, guar gum, locust bean gum.
Damn, that is quite a list. Wow, that's hardcore. Well, and the reason it's hardcore is because coconut fats are difficult to stabilize in especially in low temperature drink applications. I don't think you need to go that hardcore because they don't need to stay emulsified that long. I would. So obviously they're adding an emulsifier and also several emulsifiers and several stabilizers. You could try using what I use, which is just a mixture of gum arabic and mostly gum arabic, which you're using as an emulsifier, and xanthan, but it's not going to stabilize fully. How long does it need to stay there?
Just for like 20 minutes or like the time it takes to...
Yeah, I'm going to have to... of that list... Some of them need to be cooked and some of them don't, right? And so presumably, if you're going to go through all the trouble, you don't want to cook the hell out of it because you want to have a fresh kind of a flavor, right? Yeah, I would guess. So it's like, it's a tough problem. We had a coconut. I'll tell you what. At the bar, we finally came up with a recipe for a stabilized coconut, like orgeat, that we used. I'll figure out exactly the ratios I use. Jack, can you remind me to talk about it on the next program? And I'll just give you the recipe the next week on the air. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
We still have him?
I think he's gone.
You got him? Anyway.
That's great. Thanks for that.
All right, cool. So we'll get that recipe for you. And I'll either tweet it on Cooking Issues or we'll put it out on the air next week. All righty? All right. Okay. So the other question we had from Trudy was... regarding fish bloodlines. I don't have a problem with the taste of the fish bloodline since I actually like the fishiness, but I was wondering what this part of the fish is actually composed of. Is it basically proteins and water? That's what jellified pig's blood consists of when I used to eat it at Chinese restaurants. Why do you no longer eat it? Why do you have a different Chinese restaurant? What are your thoughts on the pig blood, Peter?
I like pig blood.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like it at pig blood?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Stas?
Yeah.
I've never had it.
Also, big fan of Boudin Noir.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Totally different, though.
Yeah, totally different.
You know what? I like it when it's got enough. I don't like it when it's so freaking rich. I like it when it's got like enough stuff in it that it's not like so rich. Like when you're just eating like a block of just like bound with the least amount of stuff, blood is just too much for me.
Yeah. So actually, there's I think it's Hungarian. They make a version of the blood sausage with rice in it, right?
Yeah.
It just helps to sort of cut it and make it not as rich.
It's yeah.
Good. Yeah, it's outstanding. Good.
What about Miami? Got a lot of blood sausage down there in Miami?
I don't know if we do, but I definitely haven't had it.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Can't speak for my people.
No, the North Miami. The North Miami, they don't have it. Mm-hmm. She's from Miami, by the way.
Ooh. I have a friend from somewhere.
Wow, strong words. That's Stas trying to be nice people.
Oh, yeah. I'm in Miami, right.
Okay. Is there anything in it that is bad for my dad who has heart health issues? Let me get to it. So what you should do I will just read this to you. You can find it. It's called Fish and Seafood Composition and Nutritional Aspects in the document Seafood Product Teacher's Research Guide by Jacqueline Wheeler. It's available as a PDF on the University of Rhode Island's website. And by the way, what we're talking about, we're talking bloodline. I assume we're talking the same thing. We're not actually talking about blood. So when you're talking about clearing the actual blood out of a fish, you're talking about, oh my God, by the way, don't let me forget if I have time, shad season. Does anyone out there know how to bone a shad? Let me finish this. Remind me.
Crickets.
You guys are, Peter, you're the worst. You know, I love you in the way that you're the worst.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to just read you this page, Trudy. Fish muscle, we're talking about the muscle that's along the outside of the fish, and that's basically kind of a fat storage mechanism for fish, especially ones that swim hard. So white fish, fish that have less of that bloodline along the side of them, tend to store almost all of their fat in their liver, whereas fish that have a larger, what they call bloodline on the side, tend to store a lot of stuff there. So it's just different compositions, not actually blood. But so here I will quote from from section 7A, dark muscle and white muscle. Fish muscle does not have a uniform color. This is my reading voice.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Some muscles are white, while others have a reddish or brown color. This dark color is usually observed just under the skin. The proportion of dark to white muscle differs continuously from head to tail. The portion also varies between species, increasing with the swimming activity of the fish and sometimes approaching 48% of the body weight. There are often differences in the chemical composition of dark and white muscles with respect to protein and lipid contents. The dark muscle has greater concentrations of hemoglobin and myoglobin than the white muscle. The presence of dark muscle is related to the activity of the fish. Those fish that swim continuously throughout their lives usually have a larger proportion of dark muscle than those who often rest on the sea bottom. It appears that white muscle controls short spurts and darting movements, while dark muscle is used for slow, continuous movement. When freezing fish, the dark muscle is sometimes removed in order to prolong the storage life of the fish. The dark muscle spoils faster because it contains hematin compounds which can act as pro-oxidants. It has been observed that dark muscle oxidizes 100 times faster than white muscle. Therefore, consumers should be careful not to store dark muscle fish for long periods, since adverse flavor changes may occur due to oxidation.
This is how you put your kids to bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway.
No, that's awesome. I didn't know that, man. That's really interesting.
Yeah, see, and sometimes, like, rather than just paraphrasing, better just to read the damn thing.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that was just a...
That was actually really well...
It was well-written, tightly packed chunk of knowledge there.
Yeah.
Right? And she finished up on another note. I want to thank you for your podcast. It's officially my favorite thing to listen to right now. Man, it's gratifying, but also I'm horrified that, like, there's nothing better than us.
Oh, yeah, right? What a world we live in.
Yeah. What a world! What a world! Like, for those of you that watch Wizard of Oz a lot. It's my favorite thing to listen to right now. I was going through a stressful time in life when I first discovered you, so you really helped me pull through it all. Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I only recently discovered you, so I'm still at the 2012 episodes and going through them chronologically. Wow. So hopefully my question isn't an old one you've already tackled, and hopefully I'll catch the answer in time. Okay, so we got time, right? We got any time?
Yep, 2 minutes. Go.
Ah! I have more questions than I can get to. Let me see. I got two left. I'll hit some Vegetti.
Okay.
Did I answer enough real cooking questions? Can I hit some Vegetti on the way out?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I'm going to get Joel next time. I'm going to get your oil question. And Monty from Jacksonville, Oregon wrote in. He was asking about Douglas fir tips. Remember I told you whether you should use the new tips or the old things. And I said I was going to test hemlock over the weekend. I didn't have an opportunity to. But he tested it, and he says – Old Doug fir needles, bitter, nasty brew. Young ones, sweet, citrusy, delicious brew. So that was his. He answered his own question, so that gave me some, awesome. Which is a shame because I have a bunch of research here to mention about it, but I didn't. And we're going to get to Ellie on the next one on his corn and oil cocktail. So we will just talk about some. Brandon wrote in, "Hey Hammer Dave. Jackie Molecules et al.
Nice.
After following the Vegetti Chronicles of the past few weeks, I thought I'd send you my thoughts on spiralized vegetables," which is, by the way, the technical term.
Yeah.
Spiralized vegetables. Though I don't have a Vegetti, well, I should think not. You're a dude. I'm kidding. I'm going back to the double entendre. There's big debates among our listeners over when she realized what was going on. And some people say never. Some people say like 3/4 of the way through.
Really?
Some people say that she knew at the start. Anyway.
She didn't know.
Well, I don't know. though I don't have a Vegetti, I do have the Paderno Spiralizer. And by the way, that's the one that's kind of the Japanese-style one that looks like it's like on a slide and you can do that. I actually have one of those too, but I have it set up to do sheets, like spiral sheets, and that's how I do potatoes for pizza. So potatoes for pizza, I don't want them in little strippy doodles, like I don't want them, you know, spiralized. I want like those thin curly sheets, very thin, almost like potato chip thickness, thin potato, like Lay style potato chip thickness, but like in long spirals. And you just toss those salt, pepper, oil, and then those on a pizza cook up just the right amount. Do you like thick pizza on it? Do you like thin? Do you like thick potato on a pizza or thin?
I don't like potato on pizza.
What? Oh, you don't like Sullivan Street's potato?
Oh yeah, I don't get that one.
Peter, what do you like?
I like potato on pizza,
but thick or thin?
Oh, both ways, man.
I'm not a huge fan of the mashed potato because it weighs it down too much.
Yeah.
Leaden. The thing I like about a thin potato is that it's, like, thin. It doesn't weigh down the crust.
I mean, when I've made pizza at home, I don't do, like, potato chip thin, but I'll go on, like, you know.
He's holding his hands up. You're on a radio.
I know. But I don't know. That's what, like a millimeter?
Yeah, how do they do it in North Miami? How do you like your potato pizza in North Miami?
Never had potato pizza. This is news to me.
Justino.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave.
All right. Oh my God, so this is too long? All right, Brandon, yeah. I'm going to get back. We'll talk more about spiralized vegetables. We'll start with it next week. Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.